A little for you. Yet Grebe stared at her solemnly. In silence, Vasya struggled to her feet and set about preparing for the night. She was arranging firewood on a bare patch of ground when the mushroom spirit spoke again, half hidden in a leaf pile.
For Morozko, you said. Are you looking for the Winter King?
Yes, said Vasya at once, I am. If you don't know where he is, do you know who might? The bear's words, his freedom for your life, beat at the back of her skull. Why had he done it? Why? And a deeper memory still, Morozko's voice saying,
as I could, I...
Her firewood was stacked in a neat open square, with kindling laid between the bigger branches. As she spoke, she was arranging pine needles for tinder.
Midnight knows, said Yetgrib. Her realm touches every midnight that ever was. But I doubt she'll tell you. As to who else might know?
Yetgrib paused, obviously thinking hard.
Are you helping me?
Vasya asked in surprise. She sat back on her heels. Yetgrib said,
you gave me tears and the flower. I will follow you and not the bear. I am first.
He puffed out his chest.
First to what? To take your side.
My side in what? Asked Vasya.
What do you think? Replied Yetgrib. You denied both the Winter King and his brother, didn't you? You made yourself a third power in their war.
He frowned.
Or are you going to find the Winter King to join his side?
I am not sure what difference it makes, said Vasya. All these questions of sides. I want to find the Winter King because I need his help. That was not the entire reason, but she was not about to explain the rest of it to the mushroom spirit. Yetgrib waved this away.
Well, even if he does join your side, I will always have been first.
Vasya frowned at her unlit fire. If you don't know how to find the Winter King, then how do you mean to help me? She asked cautiously. Yetgrib reflected.
I know all about mushrooms. I can make them grow, too.
This pleased Vasya inordinately.
I love mushrooms, she said. Can you find me any lisichki?
If Yetgrib answered, it went unheard. For the next moment she drew a sharp breath and let her soul fill with a searing memory of fire. Her pile of sticks burst into flame. She added twigs with satisfaction. Yetgrib's mouth fell open. All around a whispering rose, as if the trees were speaking to one another.
You should be careful, said Yetgrib when he could speak.
Why? Said Vasya, still pleased with herself.
Magic makes people mad, said the mushroom. You change reality so much you forget what is real. But perhaps a few more cherti will follow you after all.
As though to punctuate his words, two fish flopped out of the lake and lay gasping, red-silver in the light of Vasya's campfire.
Follow me where?
Vasya demanded in some exasperation, but she did go and take the fish.
Thank you,
she added grudgingly in the direction of the water. If the Bagyanik heard, he didn't answer. But she didn't think he'd gone away. He was waiting. For what? She didn't know. Chapter 12 Bargaining Vasya gutted the fish and wrapped them in clay to roast in the coals of her fire. Yetgrib, true to his word, scampered off and brought her handfuls of mushrooms. Unfortunately, not only did he not know which were lisichki, he didn't know which were edible. Vasya had to pick through alarming handfuls of toadstools, but the good ones she stuffed into her fish along with herbs and wild onion, and when they were done, she burned her fingers eating them. A full stomach was pleasant, but the night itself was not. The wind blew sharp off the lake, and Vasya could not shake the sense of being watched, of being measured by eyes she could not see. She felt like a girl hurled unwary into a tale she didn't understand, with folk all around waiting for her to take up a part she didn't know. Salovey's absence was a gnawing misery that did not ease. Eventually, Vasya fell into a chilly doze, but even sleep was no respite. She dreamed of fists and enraged faces, of shouting for her horse to run. But instead, he turned into a nightingale, and a man with a bow and arrow shot him out of the sky. Vasya jerked awake with her horse's name on her lips and heard somewhere in the darkness the thud of uneven hoofbeats. She hauled herself upright, stood barefoot in the cool summer bracken, painfully stiff. Her fire was down to a few red-edged coals. The moon hung low on the horizon. A light was coming through the trees. She thought of men with torches, and her first instinct was to flee. But it wasn't torches, she realized, squinting. It was the golden mare, alone. Her glow from the night before had dimmed. She was stumbling on a bad foreleg, her breast spattered with foam. Vasya thought she heard whispers in the wood beyond the horse. A foul smell gusted on the wind. Swiftly, Vasya threw wood onto her little campfire. Here, she called. The mare tried to run, tripped over nothing, turned her steps to Vasya. Her head hung low. In the newborn firelight, a gash in her foreleg was clearly visible. Vasya picked up her axe and a flaming log. She couldn't see what pursued the mare, though the smell of it thickened all around them, rotten ripe, like carrion in the heat. Holding her pitiful weapons, she backed toward the water. Vasya had no love for the living spark that ignited Moscow, but she had failed her own horse. She would not fail this one. This way, she said. The mare had no words in reply. Nothing but terror communicated with her whole body. Still, she came toward Vasya. Jet grieb, Vasya called. A patch of mushrooms, glowing sickly green in the darkness, quivered.
You had better survive this. What good will my being first be otherwise? Everyone is watching.
What? But if he answered, she did not hear. For the bear stepped softly out of the trees into the moonlight beside the water. In Moscow, he had looked like a man. He still did. But it was a man with sharp teeth and wildness in his single eye. She could see the beast in him stretching out like a shadow at his back. He seemed stranger, older, at home in this impossible forest.
I suppose this is why the Bagyanik wanted me to spend the night in the forest, she said, standing tense.
Horse, snarling breaths sounded from the undergrowth.
He did want me dead, after all.
The unscarred corner of the bear's mouth curled.
Perhaps, or perhaps not. Stop puffing up like a cat. I didn't come to kill you.
The burning log had begun to scorch her hand. She flung it onto the ground in between them.
Hunting the firebird, then? Not even that. But my creatures will have their sport.
He hissed at the mare, grinning, and she shied back, her hind feet in the water.
Leave her be, Vasya snapped. Very well, said the bear unexpectedly.
He seated himself on a log beside her fire.
Won't you sit with me?
She didn't move. His dog teeth gleamed sharp and white in the gloom when he smiled.
Truly, I do not desire your life, Vasilisa Petrovna.
He opened his empty hands.
I wish to make you an offer.
That surprised her.
You have already offered me my life. I didn't take it. I saved myself. Why would I take anything less from you?
The bear did not answer directly. Instead, he looked up at the tree-fringed starlight, breathed deep of the summer night. She could see the stars reflected in his eye, as though he were drinking the sky after long darkness. She did not want to understand that joy. I passed uncounted lives of men bound to a clearing at the edge of my brother's lands, said the bear. Do you think he was a good steward of the world while I slept? At least Morosko did not leave destruction in his wake, said Vasya. Beside her, the mare was bleeding into the water. What have you been doing in Moscow?
Amusing myself, said the bear matter-of-factly. My brother did the same once, although he likes to play the saint now. Once we were more alike. We are twins, after all.
If you are trying to make me trust you, it isn't working.
But, the bear went on, my brother thinks that men and charity can share this world. These same men that are spreading like sickness, rattling their church bells, forgetting us. My brother is a fool. If men are unchecked, one day there will be no charity, no road through midnight, no wonder in the world at all.
Vasya did not wish to understand why the bear raised his eyes in wonder to the night sky, and she did not want to agree with him now. But it was true. All over Rus, charity were faint as smoke. They guarded their waters and woods and households with hands that did not grasp, with minds that barely remembered. She said nothing.
Men fear what they do not understand, murmured the bear. They hurt you. They beat you, spat on you, put you in the fire. Men will suck all the wildness out of the world until there is no place for a witch girl to hide. They will burn you and all your kind.
It was her deepest and most wretched fear. He must know that.
But it doesn't have to be so, the bear continued. We can save the charity, save the land between noon and midnight. Can we? Asked Vasya.
Her voice was not quite steady.
How? Come with me to Moscow.
He was on his feet again, the unscarred half of his face ruddy in the firelight.
Help me throw down the bell towers, break the grip of the princes, be my ally, and you will have vengeance on your enemies. No one will dare scorn you again.
Miedved was a spirit, no more made of flesh than Dietgrip, and yet, in that clearing, he seemed to pulse with raw life.
You killed my father, Vasya said.
He spread his hands.
Your father threw himself upon my claws. My brother got your allegiance with lies, didn't he? With whispers and half-truths in the dark, and his two blue eyes, so tempting to maidens.
She fought to keep all feeling from her face. The corner of his mouth curled before he continued.
But here I am, asking for your allegiance with nothing but the truth.
If you are here with the truth, then tell me what you want, said Vasya, with less art and more honesty.
I want an ally. Join me and take your vengeance. We, the old ones, will rule this land once more. That is what the Cherti want. That is why the Bagianik brought you here. That is why they are all watching, for you to hear me and agree.
Was he lying? She found herself horribly wondering how it would be to agree, to let the rage inside her loose in a spasm of violence. She could feel the impulse echoed in the scarred figure before her. He understood her guilt, her sorrow, the fury that had come down on Yetgrib's head.
Yes, he whispered, we understand each other. We cannot make a new world without first breaking the old.
Breaking? Said Vasya. She hardly recognized her own voice.
What will you break in the making of this new world?
Nothing that cannot be repaired.
Think of it. Think of the girl children that will not face the fire.
She wanted to go to Moscow in power and throw the city down. His wildness called to her, and the sorrow of his long imprisonment. The golden mare stood very still.
I would have my vengeance, she murmured.
Yes, he said, in full measure. Would Konstantin Nikonovich die screaming?
She thought he hesitated before answering.
He would die. And who else would die, Miatved? Men and women die every day. They die according to God's will. They do not die for me, said Vasya.
The nails of her free hand tore into her palm.
Not one life lost is worth the price of my grief. Do you think that I'm a fool? That you can drip words like sweet poison in my ear? I am not your ally, monster, nor will I ever be.
She thought that a murmur rose from the forest all around, but she couldn't tell if it was a sound of delight or disappointment.
Ah, said the bear.
The regret in his voice seemed real.
So wise in some ways, little Vasilisa Petrovna, and yet so foolish in others. For, of course, if you do not join me, you cannot remain alive. My life was the price of your freedom, Vasya said.
The lake was a cold presence at her back. The golden mare still stood warm and trembling beside her.
You cannot kill me. I offered you your life, said the bear. It is not my fault you are a stubborn fool and did not take it. My debt is paid. Besides, I am not going to kill you. You can join me alive, or you can be my servant.
His mouth quirked irrepressibly.
Less alive.
Vasya heard a soft, shuffling footstep. Another. Vasya's pulse sounded loud in her ears. In her mind echoed an old warning.
The bear is loose. Beware the dead.
I am going to enjoy this, said Medved.
Tell me what you decide.
He stepped back.
Either way, I will give my brother your regrets.
To her left, a dead man with red eyes and a filthy visage slunk into the light. To her right, a woman grinned, blood on her lips, a few locks of rotten hair still clinging to her bone-white skull. The dead thing's eyes were pits of hell, scarlet and black. When their mouths opened, the points of their teeth dazzled, sharp, in the last of the firelight. Vasya and the mare were surrounded by a shrinking half-circle. The golden mare reared. For an instant, it seemed as though vast wings of flame flared from her back. But she came to earth, a horse still and wounded. She couldn't fly. Vasya dropped her useless axe. Her soul was still full of remembered fire. She clenched her fists and forgot that the dead things were not burning. It worked better than she could have hoped. Two went up like torches. The upiri screamed as they burned and blundered about, howling. She had to snatch up a branch and fend them off, her bare feet in the water. The golden mare backed up, striking out with frantic forehooves.
Oh-ho, said the bear in a new voice. Moscow put the fire in your soul, did it? Truly you are half-chaos spirit. You would like being my ally. Won't you reconsider?
Are you never silent? Vasya demanded.
Her body was streaming cold sweat. Another upir burst into flames, and reality began to waver. Now she understood.
Magic makes men mad. They forget what is real, because too much is possible.
But there were still four more. She had no choice. The dead things were advancing once more. The bear's eye locked on hers, as though he could see the seed of insanity there.
Yes, he breathed. Lose your mind, wild girl, and you'll be mine.
She drew a deep breath and,
enough, said a new voice.
The sound seemed to shake Vasya out of a dark dream. An old woman, big-handed and broad-shouldered, strode between the trees, took in the lurid scene, and said irritably, as though it were the most natural thing in the world,
Medved, you shouldn't have tried it at midnight.
At the same moment, a wave from the lake nearly swamped Vasya,
and the Bagyanik appeared, floating in the shallows, teeth bared.
Eater, you didn't say anything about hurting the horses.
The old woman might have been tall once, but she was crabbed with age, her clothes rough, her hands long-nailed, her legs bowed. There was a basket on her back. Vasya, standing with her feet in the lake, reality gone pliant as mist, could see the bear startled, wary.
You are dead, he said to the old woman.
The old woman chortled. At midnight? On my own lands?
You should know better.
Vasya, as though in a dream, thought she caught the gleam of the midnight demon's hair, her starry eyes, half hidden in the trees, watching. The bear said, placating,
I should have known better, but why interfere? What care you for your traitorous family?
I care at least for the mare, you great hungry thing, retorted the old woman. She stamped her foot. Go back to terrorizing Muscovy.
One of the upiri was creeping up behind the old woman. She didn't look, didn't even twitch, but the dead thing burst into white fire and collapsed with a shriek.
I suppose, said the bear, I'd have to wait a long time for you to go mad.
There was respect in his voice. Vasya listened in astonishment.
I have been mad for years, said the old woman.
When she laughed, every hair on Vasya's body rose.
But at midnight, this is still my realm.
The girl won't stay with you, said the bear,
with a jerk of his chin at Vasya. She won't stay, however you try to persuade her. She'll leave you just like the others. When she does, I'll be waiting.
To Vasya, he added, your choice still stands. You are going to be my ally one way or the other.
The Cherti will not have it otherwise. Go away, snapped the woman.
And unbelievably, the bear bowed to them both and slunk away through the dark, his servants shambling, the hell light gone from their eyes, followed him. Chapter 13. Baba Yaga. The sounds of the night resumed. Vasya's feet were numb in the water. The golden mare's head hung low. The old woman pursed her lips, inspecting girl and horse.
Babushka, said Vasya cautiously, thank you for our lives.
If you want to stand in the lake until you grow fins, that is your affair, the old woman replied. Otherwise, come to the fire.
She stumped away, added sticks to the blaze. Vasya waded out of the lake, but the mare did not move.
You are bleeding, Vasya said to her,
trying to get a look at the gash on her foreleg. The mare's ears were still pinned to her head.
Finally, she said, I ran, while the others flew, to lead the upiri away. But they were too fast, and then my leg was torn and I could not fly.
I can help you, Vasya volunteered. The mare made no answer, but suddenly Vasya understood her stillness. The golden head sunk low.
Do you fear being bound again? Because you are wounded? Do not be afraid. I killed the sorcerer. Tamara is dead too.
She could feel the old woman at her back, listening. I have no rope here, let alone a golden bridle. I will not touch you without your leave. Come to the fire. Vasya suited action to word, making her own way to the fire. The mare stood still, the set of her ears uncertain. The old woman was standing on the other side of the flames, waiting for Vasya. Her hair was white, but her face was a distorted mirror of the girl's own. Vasya stared with shock, hunger, recognition. The forest still seemed thick with eyes, watching. There was an instant of perfect silence. Then the woman said,
What is your name?
Vasilisa Petrovna, said Vasya.
What was your mother's name?
Marina Ivanovna, said Vasya. Her mother was called Tamara, the girl who put the bridle on the firebird.
The woman's eyes roved over Vasya's torn and bruised face, her cropped hair, her clothes, and perhaps more than anything, the expression in the girl's eyes.
"I'm surprised you didn't frighten the bear off," said the old woman dryly, "with your face so frightful. Or perhaps he liked it. Hard to know with that one."
Her hands were trembling. Vasya said nothing.
"Tamara and her sister were my daughters. Long ago, it would seem to you."
Vasya knew that. "How are you alive?" she whispered.
"I'm not," said the old woman. "I died before you were born. But this is midnight."
The golden mare broke their silence with splashing as she stepped out of the lake. As one, they turned to the horse. The firelight gleamed cruelly on the scars of whip and spur.
"A pitiful pair you make," said the old woman.
Vasya said, "Babushka, we are both in need of help."
"Pojar first," said the old woman. "She is bleeding still."
"Is that her name?" A shrug.
"What name would compass a creature like her? It is only what I call her."
But helping the mare was not so easy. Pojar laid back her ears if either of them tried to touch her. When she switched her tail, showers of sparks tumbled to the summer earth. One began to smolder. Vasya put it out with a booted foot.
"Wounded or no, you are a menace,"
the old woman snorted. The mare glared. But Pojar was exhausted, too. At last, when Vasya ran a hand from her shoulder to her knee, she only shuddered.
"This is going to hurt," said Vasya grimly. "You are not to kick."
"I am not promising anything," said the mare, ears pinned.
Between them, they convinced the mare to stand still long enough for the girl to sew up her leg, although Vasya had a few new bruises by the time it was done. After, when a shaken Pojar had escaped, limping to graze at a safe distance, Vasya sank to the earth beside the fire, pushing sweaty hair off her face. Her clothes had dried in the heat of the mare's body. It was still blackest night, although it seemed hours since the bear had come. The woman had a pot in her basket, salt, some onions. When she thrust her hand in the lake, she withdrew fish, as naturally as a woman pulls bread from her own oven. She set about making soup, as though it were not midnight. Vasya watched her.
"Is it your house?" she asked.
"The house by the oak tree?" The old woman was gutting the fish and didn't look up.
"It was. Once."
"The chest.
Did you leave it there for me to find?"
"Yes," said the woman, still not looking up.
"You knew that I..."
"You are the witch of the wood, then," said Vasya. "Who tends the horses?" She thought of Maria, and the old dread name, the fairy tale name, came to her lips unbidden. With a shiver, she said,
"Baba Yaga, you are my great-grandmother."
The old woman brayed a short laugh. The fish guts shone darkly between her fingers when she flung them back into the lake.
"Near enough, I suppose. This witch and that were woven into a single fairy tale. Perhaps I am one of the witches."
"How did you know I was here?"
"Polunochnitsa told me, of course," returned the old woman.
She was rummaging in the contents of Vasya's basket now, adding greens to the pot. Her eyes gleamed in the dark, big and wild, and reddened by the fire.
"Although she almost waited until it was too late. She wanted you and the bear to meet."
"Why?"
"To see what you do."
"Why?" Vasya asked again. She felt perilously close to breaking into a child's whining complaint. Her feet ached, and her ribs, and the cut on her face. More than ever, she felt as if she'd been thrust into a tale she hardly understood. The old woman didn't answer at once. She studied Vasya again. Finally, she said,
"Most of the Cherti do not want to strike a blow at the world of men, but they don't want to fade either. They are torn."
Vasya frowned.
"Are they? What has that to do with me?"
"Why do you think Morozko went to such lengths to save your life? Yes, Polunochnitsa told me that too.
I don't know why, said Vasya. And this time her voice rose a note, despite her best efforts. Do you think I wanted him to? It was utter madness. A quick, malicious gleam from beneath the old woman's lids.
Was it?
I suppose you'll never know.
I would if you'd tell me.
That, no.
It is something you must come to understand yourself, or not.
The old woman grinned, still with that edge of malice. She tossed salt in the soup.
Is it an easy road you're after, child?
If it were, I'd not have left home, retorted Vasya, holding hard to courtesy. But I am tired of stumbling blind in the dark. The old woman was stirring the pot now. The firelight caught a strange expression on her face.
It is always dark here, she said.
Vasya, still bursting with questions, found herself silenced, ashamed of herself. In a different voice, she said,
You are the one who sent midnight to me on the road to Moscow.
I am, said the old woman. I was curious when I heard a girl child of my blood had gone wandering with a horse from the lake. Vasya flinched at the reminder of Solovey. The soup was ready. The witch ladled up a large bowl for herself, a meager one for Vasya. Vasya didn't mind. She'd stuffed herself on fish earlier, but the broth was good. She drank it slowly.
Babushka, she asked, did you ever see your daughters after they left this place?
Baba Yaga's old face grew still as carven stone.
No, they abandoned me.
Vasya thought of Tamara's withered ghost, wondered if this woman could have prevented that horror.
My girl plotted with a sorcerer to take the firebird by force, snapped the old woman, as though she could read Vasya's thought. I could not catch them. The mare is the fastest thing that runs. But at least my daughter was punished,
Vasya said.
She was your child. Do you know what the sorcerer did to Tamara? She did it to herself. Shall I tell you what happened to her? Vasya asked, growing angry, about her courage and her despair, of how she was trapped in the Terem of Moscow until she died, and even after you shut your lands and didn't even try to help her? She betrayed me, retorted the witch. She chose a man over her own kin, gave the golden mare into Kaschei's keeping. My Varvara left me too. She tried first to take Tamara's place, but she could not. Of course she could not. She had not the sight. So she left the coward.
Vasya stilled, struck with sudden understanding.
I didn't need either of them, the old woman went on. I shut the way in. I shut every road but the Midnight Road, and that road is mine, for Lady Midnight is my servant. I have kept my lands inviolate until a new heir should come. Kept your lands inviolate? Vasya demanded incredulously. While your children were trapped in the world of men, while your daughter was abandoned by her lover?
Yes, said the witch. She deserved it. Vasya said nothing. But, the old woman went on, her voice softening,
I have a new heir now. I knew you'd come one day. You can speak to horses. You awakened the Domovaya with fire. You survived the Bagyanik. You will not betray me. You will live in a house by the oak tree, and I will come every midnight to teach you all I know. How to master Cherti, how to keep your own people safe. Don't you want to know those things, poor little girl, with your burned face?
Yes, said Vasya, I do want to know those things. The woman sat back, looking satisfied.
When there is time to learn, Vasya continued, but not yet. The bear is free in Rus.
The old woman bristled.
What is Rus to you? They tried to burn you, didn't they? They killed your horse.
Rus is my family, my brothers and sister, my niece who sees as I do, your grandchildren, your great-grandchildren. The woman's eyes began disconcertingly to gleam.
Another with a sight? And a girl child? We will walk through midnight and get her.
Steal her away, you mean? Take her from her mother who loves her? Vasya dragged in air. You should think of what happened to your own children first.
No, said the woman. I didn't need them, little serpents.
Her eyes were savage, and Vasya wondered if it were solitude or magic that had planted this deep seed of madness inside her, that she would reject her children so.
You will have my powers and my charity, great-granddaughter.
Vasya got up and went and knelt at the old woman's side. You honor me, she said, forcing her voice to calm. At dusk I was a vagabond, and now I am someone's great-grandchild. The old woman sat stiff, puzzled, watching Vasya with reluctant hope. But, she finished, it was for my sake that the bear was freed. I must see him bound anew.
The bear's amusements do not concern you. He was long a prisoner. Don't you think he deserves a little sunlight?
He just tried to kill me, said Vasya acidly. That is one amusement that concerns me.
You cannot stand against him. You are too young, and you have seen the dangers of too much magic. He is the cleverest of the Cherti. If I had not come, you would have died.
One withered hand reached out and caught Vasya's.
Stay here and learn, child.
I will, said Vasya. I will. If the bear is bound, then I will come back and be your heir and learn. But I must see my family safe. Can you help me? The old woman withdrew her hand. Hostility was winning out over the hope in her face.
I will not help you. I am steward of this lake, these woods. I care not for the world beyond.
Can you at least tell me where the Winter King is imprisoned? Asked Vasya. The woman laughed, really laughed, throwing her head back with a cackle.
Do you think his brother will have just left him lying, like a kitten he forgot to drown?
Her eyes narrowed.
Or are you just like Tamara, choosing a man over your own kin?
No, said Vasya, but I need his help to bind the bear again. Do you know where he is? Despite her efforts at calm, a hard edge was creeping back into her own voice.
Not on any of my lands.
Lady Midnight was still standing in the shadows, listening intently. Baba Yaga has three servants, riders all, day, dusk, and night. That was how the story went.
Nevertheless, said Vasya, I am going to find him. You don't know where to start.
I am going to start in midnight, said Vasya shortly, with another glance at the midnight demon.
Surely if it includes every midnight that ever was, one of them contains Morozko in his prison. It is a land so vast, your mind cannot understand it.
Will you help me then? Vasya asked again, looking into the face that was the mirror of her own.
Please, Babushka, I am sure there is a way.
The woman's mouth worked. She seemed to hesitate. Vasya's heart leaped with sudden hope. But then the witch turned stiffly away, jaw set.
You are as bad as Tamara, as bad as Varvara, as bad as either of those wicked girls. I will not help you, fool. You will only get yourself killed and for nothing after your precious Winter King went to such lengths to see you safe.
She was on her feet. Vasya was too.
Wait, she said. Please.
Midnight stood motionless in the darkness. Furiously, the old woman said,
If you think better of your foolishness, come back and perhaps I will reconsider. If not, well, I let my own daughters go. A great granddaughter should be even easier.
Then she stepped into the darkness and was gone. Chapter 14 Vodyanoi. Vasya wished she could cry. Part of her soul yearned after her great-grandmother, as it yearned after the mother she'd never known, after her dead nurse, and the elder sister who'd gone away so young. But how could she live quietly in a land of magic while the bear was loose, her family in danger, the Winter King left to rot?
You are too alike, said a familiar voice.
Vasya raised her head. Midnight slipped out of the shadows, rash, heedless. The moonlight kindled the Chert's pale hair to white fire.
So, you mean to seek the Winter King?
Why are you asking?
Curiosity, said Midnight lightly.
Vasya didn't believe her.
Are you going to tell the bear? She asked. Why should I? He will only laugh. You cannot get Morozko out. You will only die trying.
Well, said Vasya, you would rather I died, it seems, judging by our last meeting. Why not tell me where he is, and I'll be dead the sooner?
Polunochnitsa looked amused. It wouldn't do any good if I did. Getting somewhere in midnight is not so simple as knowing where you mean to go.
How do you travel by midnight, then?
Polunochnitsa said softly. There is no north in midnight, no south, no east or west, no here or there. You must only hold your destination in your mind and walk and not falter in the darkness, for there is no telling how long it will take to get where you wish to go.
Is that all? Why did Varvara make me touch an oak sapling then?
Polunochnitsa snorted. A little that one knows, but she does not understand. Affinity makes it easier to travel. Like calls to like. Blood calls to blood. It is easiest to go to your own kin. You couldn't reach the tree by the lake alone because you used a weak affinity. Oak tree to oak tree.
Her expression went sly.
Perhaps it won't be hard for you to find the Winter King, little maiden. There is an affinity there, surely. After all, he loved you enough to yield up his freedom. Perhaps he is longing for you even now.
Vasya had never heard anything more ridiculous, but all she said was, "How do I get into midnight?"
Every night when the hour comes, my realm is there for those with eyes to see.
Very well. How do I get out of midnight again?
The easiest way?
Go to sleep. Midnight was watching her intently now, and your sleeping mind will seek the dawn.
Jedgrib popped out from under a log. Where were you in all this excitement? Vasya asked him.
Hiding, said the mushroom spirit succinctly.
I'm glad you are not dead.
He gave Midnight a nervous glance.
Better not go looking for the Winter King, though. You'll get killed, and after I have gone through so much trouble to be your ally.
I must, said Vasya. He sacrificed himself for me. She saw Midnight's eyes narrow. She was deadly serious, but she'd not spoken in the tones of a lovelorn maiden.
That was his choice, not yours, said Jedgrib, looking more uneasy than ever.
Vasya, without another word, went to Pozhar, stopped a healthy distance away from where the mare was grazing. Pozhar liked to bite.
Lady, are you all kin? You and the other horses that are birds?
Pozhar flicked her ears in annoyance.
Of course we are, she said.
Her leg already looked much better. Vasya took a deep breath.
Then will you do me a kindness?
Pozhar at once shied.
You are not getting on my back, she said.
Vasya thought she heard Polunochnitsa laugh.
No, Vasya said, I would not ask it of you. I meant to ask, will you come through midnight with me? Take me to Morozko's white mare. Blood calls to blood, I learn.
This last was for Polunochnitsa's benefit. She could almost feel Polunochnitsa's arrested stare. Pozhar was still for a moment. Her great golden ears flicked once, back and forth uncertainly.
I suppose I will try, said Pozha irritably, and stamped. If that is all, but you are still not getting on my back.
Just as well, Vasya said. I have a broken rib.
Jetgrib was frowning.
Didn't you just say?
Will no one credit me with common sense? Vasya demanded, stalking back to the fire. Affinity guides one through the land of midnight, well and good. But I am not fool enough to trust the tie between Morosko and me that was made up of lies and longing and half-truths, especially since I suspect that the bear might be expecting me to and get myself killed in the process.
Judging by Polonochnitsa's face, that was the exact thing he was expecting.
Even if you do find him, she said, recovering, you won't be able to get the Winter King out.
One task at a time, said Vasya.
She took a handful of strawberries from her basket, held them out.
Will you tell me something else, Lady Midnight?
Oh, is it bribery now?
But Polunochnitsa took the fruit, bent her head to the sweetness.
Tell you what?
Will the bear or his servants follow me if I go into Midnight after Morosko?
Midnight hesitated.
No, she said. He has enough to do in Moscow. If you want to throw your life away on a prison that cannot be breached, then that is your affair.
She smelled the strawberries again. But I will give you a last warning. The Midnights nearest you only cross distance. You can go into and out of them as you will. But the farther Midnights, those cross years. If you fall asleep there and lose the Midnight Road, then you will vanish like the dew, or your flesh fall at once to dust.
Vasya shuddered. How will I know which is near and which is far?
It doesn't matter. If you wish to find the Winter King, you must not sleep until you do.
She took a deep breath.
Then I will not fall asleep.
Vasya went to the lake to take a long drink and found the Bagyanik writhing, furious, in the shallows.
The firebird has come back, snarled the Bagyanik, against all hope, to live again by the water. And perhaps there will be a great herd again to fly over the lake at dawn. Now you are taking her away on your own foolish errand.
I am not forcing her to come with me, said Vasya gently.
The Bagyanik beat his tail against the water, wordlessly miserable.
Vasya said, when Pozhar wishes to come back, she may. And if I survive this, then I will come and live by the lake and learn. Seek out all the scattered horses and tend them. In memory of my own, whom I loved very much.
Will that content you?
The Bagyanik said nothing. She turned away.
From behind, the Bagyanik said in a new voice, I will hold you to your word.
Vasya collected her basket, the remains of her fish. From the grass, Jetgrib piped.
Are you leaving me behind?
He was sitting on a stump now, glowing an unpleasant green in the darkness.
Vasya said dubiously, I may go far from the lake.
Jetgrib looked small and determined. I am going with you anyway, he said. I am on your side, remember? Besides, I can't fall to dust.
How comforting for you, said Vasya coolly. Why be on my side?
The bear can make Cherti angry, stronger with wrath. But you can make us more real. I understand now.
So does the Bagyanik.
Yet Greep looked proud. I am on your side, and I am going with you. You would be lost without me.
Perhaps I would, Vasya said, smiling. Then a note of doubt crept into her voice. Are you going to walk?
He was very small.
Yes, said Jetgrib and marched off.
Pozhar shook her mane.
Hurry up, she said to Vasya.
The golden mare walked into the night, taking mouthfuls of grass as she went. Sometimes, if she found a good patch, she would put her head down to graze in earnest, Vasya did not hurry her, not wanting to irritate the gash in Pujar's foreleg, but she was anxiously wondering when she would start to get sleepy, wondering how many hours it would take. No point in thinking of it. She had decided either she would succeed or she wouldn't.
"I have never left the lake," Jagdeep confided to Vasya as they walked, "not since there were villages of men there and the children dreamed me alive when they went mushrooming in autumn."
"Villages?" asked Vasya. "By the lake?"
By then they were walking in a strange glade with rough grass and mud under her feet. The stars were low and warm in the generous sky, summertime stars.
"Yes," said Jagdeep. "There used to be villages of men on the borders of the magic country. Sometimes, if they were brave, men and women would go in, seeking adventure."
"Perhaps men and women might be persuaded to do so again," said Vasya, fired with the idea.
"And they could live in peace with Cherti, safe from the evils of this world."
Jagdeep looked doubtful and Vasya sighed. On they went, walk and halt and walk again. Now the night was cooler, now warmer. Now they were walking on rock, with wind whistling past Pojar's ears. Now they were skirting a pond, with a full moon lying like a pearl in the center. All was still. All was silent. Vasya was weary, but nerves and her long sleep in the house by the lake kept her moving. She was barefoot, her boots tied to her basket. Though her feet were sore, the ground felt good on her skin. Pojar was a silver-gold glimmer between the trees, a little short on her wounded foreleg. Jagdeep was a fainter presence still, creeping from stump to rock to tree. Vasya hoped that midnight had been right about the bear not following her, but she looked often over her shoulder and once or twice had to stop herself from telling the mare to hurry. Walking through a wooded hollow, with tall pines on all sides, she found herself thinking for the first time how pleasant it would be to make a bed of boughs and sleep until first light. Hurriedly seeking a distraction, Vasya realized that it had been a while since she'd seen the mushroom spirit's green glow. She peered into the darkness, searching.
"Jagdeep!"
She scarcely dared to speak above a whisper, not knowing what dangers stalked this place.
"Jagdeep!"
The mushroom spirit popped out of the loam at her feet, sending Pojar skittering backward. Even Vasya jumped.
"Where have you been?" she asked him, sharp with fright.
"Helping," said Jagdeep.
He thrust something into her hands. Vasya realized that it was a sack of food. Not wild food, like her strawberries and dandelions, but flat camp bread, smoked fish, a skin of mead.
"Oh," said Vasya.
She tore off a piece of flatbread, gave it to him, gave another to the offended Pojar, and tore off a third for herself.
"Where did you get this?" she asked him, gnawing.
"There are men over there," said Jagdeep.
Vasya looked up and saw the faint glow of fires between the trees. Pojar backed. Nostrils flared uneasily.
"But you shouldn't go any nearer," the mushroom spirit added.
"Why not?" asked Vasya, puzzled. "They are encamped near a river," said Jagdeep matter-of-factly, "and the Vodyanoi there means to kill them."
"Kill them?" said Vasya. "How? Why?"
"With water and fear, I suppose," said Jagdeep. "How else would he kill anyone? As to why, well, the bear probably told him to. Most water creatures are his, and he is putting forth his power all through Roost now. Let's get away."
Vasya hesitated. It was not pity for men drowned asleep that decided her. It was wondering why the bear would want to kill these men in particular.
"You travel by midnight through affinity."
What affinity would have drawn her here now? She peered again through the trees. Many fires. The camp was not a small one. Then Vasya heard a faint, familiar rumbling, as though horses were coming near at a gallop over stones. But it was not horses. The sound decided her. She thrust her basket at Jagdeep.
"Stay here. Both of you, she said to the mare and to the mushroom spirit. Barefoot, she dashed toward the glow of the low-burning fires, raising her voice to shout through the dark. You, the camp, wake up! Wake up! The river is rising. She half ran, half slid down the steep sides of the gully where they had made camp. The horses were picketed and jerking at their lines. They knew what was happening. Vasya cut their pickets, and the beasts bolted for higher ground. A heavy hand fell on Vasya's shoulder. Horse-thieving boy? Asked the man, his hand pinching, smelling of garlic and rotten teeth. Vasya wrenched away. She might otherwise have been afraid of him, for the touch and the reek brought back raw memories. But now she had more pressing concerns. Do I look like I am hiding a horse in my hat? I have saved your horses for you. Listen, the river is rising. The man turned his head to look, just as a wall of black water exploded from downstream came racing past them. The hollow where the band had made camp was instantly awash. Men, half asleep, were running everywhere in the darkness, shouting. The water was rising unnaturally fast, throwing men off their feet and frightening them by its very strangeness. One man began calling orders. First, the silver, he shouted, then the horses. But the water was rising faster and faster. A man was pulled down by the flood, then another. Many of the men made it to higher ground, but the one who'd been calling orders was still floundering in the wash. As Vasya watched, the Vodyanoi, the river king, shot out of the water directly in front of him. The man couldn't see the chert, but he jerked back anyway, on some instinct older than sight, and nearly went under. Prince, said the Vodyanoi. His laugh was the grinding of rocks in the flood. I was king here when princes groveled in the mud of my river and threw in their daughters to ensure my favor. Now, drown. The black water surged and knocked the man off his feet. Vasya had taken refuge in a tree while the current raged below. Now she dove from a limb straight into the torrent. The water snatched at her with astonishing force, and she could feel the Vodyanoi's rage in it. In her veins was the same strength that had broken the bars of her cage in Moscow. She wasn't sleepy now. The leader of the camp came up for air, gasping. Men were shouting to him from above, cursing each other. Vasya swam three strokes, cutting across the current. The leader was a big man, but fortunately he could swim a little. She seized him under the arms and on a last burst of strength, heaved him to shore. A stab of pain ran down her half-knitted ribs. The man just lay in the mud, gaping at her. She could hear men converging on all sides, but she didn't speak, just whirled and dove back into the water, leaving the man clinging to the shore and staring after her. She let herself be swept downstream until she caught a rock in the middle and clung there, gasping. River King, she shouted, I want to talk to you. The water rushed along with broken trees borne on its flood. She had to clamber higher on her rock to avoid a huge limb spinning toward her in the current. The Vodyanoi popped out of the water scarce an arm's length away. His grinning mouth was filled with needle-sharp teeth, his skin thick with slime and river muck. Water ran like diamonds down his warty skin and foamed and boiled around him. He opened his spine-toothed mouth and roared at her. This is when I'm supposed to scream, Vasya thought. Then he laughs, and I cry out in despair, believing in my own death. And that is when he sinks his teeth into me and drags me down. That was how Cherti killed people, by making them believe they were doomed. Vasya spoke as composedly as one could, clinging to a rock in a current. Forgive my intrusion. It is not easy to startle the River King.
his gaping mouth closed abruptly.
Who are you?
It doesn't matter, said Vasya.